Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Chris Voronis, liberal John McDonough, and John McCarron, journalism professor from DePaul University. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the new Museum of Broadcast Communications at the Chicago, I almost said Chicago Cultural Center, on Chicago's State Street, that great street. Nice to have you with us. Phone lines open at 1-800-723-8289, 1-800-723-8289. And if you'd like to email us a comment, it's btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. And for many of you listening and watching in the Chicagoland area and listening all over the country, you know that for many years we did this program from the Chicago Cultural Center. And this past week I was back over there looking at all of the material that's still there in the basement. We have thousands of tapes. And they are moving into our new home here on State Street next week. So the Cultural Center was on my mind.
And before that at the Bankers Building.
And that's right. And we go back a long, long way. So these tapes they're all coming together in the basement of our new home. So, again, thanks very much. Happy Father's Day to everyone listening and watching around the country. We hope that your Father's Day has been a pleasant one. And we are going to be talking this evening about the hot political news based on what the president had to do and say last week. As you know, the issue of Hispanics. Hispanic voters that helped elect Barack Obama, they have been very, very concerned about the president, thinking that he has not moved fast enough on some of the promises that he made when he was running for presidency, with the presidency. And so this past week, he decided to do something about it. And so by executive order, he basically is stopping deportations and beginning to grant work permits to DREAM Act eligible students. Now, these are the people between the 16 years of age and no one older 30. Who basically came to the United States when their parents came to the United States. So their parents may be undocumented workers, and again, the question was whether or not their children should be deported. It's a big story. Obviously, we've talked a lot about it. But this is what the president had to say in announcing his decision last week. He said, "They pledge allegiance to our flag. They are Americans in their hearts, in their minds, in every single way but one on paper." Janet Napolitano, his director of Homeland Security, added, "This grant of deferred action is not immunity. It is not amnesty. It is an exercise of discretion so that these young people are not in the removal system. It will help us to continue to streamline immigration enforcement and ensure that resources are not spent pursuing the removal of low-priority cases involving productive young people," end of quote. Chris Voronis, you are, generally speaking, on this program, you have been supportive of illegal not illegal immigration, certainly a softer approach to crackdowns than most Republicans. So are you pleased with what the president had to say, or do you see it as just a political move?
As a policy end, I think it's the right thing to do. There's a lot of Republicans out there who agree. I just can't get over, though, the cynicism of this White House, hypocrisy even. This is a White House that has doubled deportations from George Bush. 400,000 deportations under Obama. And I want to add that Sugar and Honey prose at Obama's Rose Garden speech just clashes completely with his quote from about 16 months ago, when a Univision town hall meeting, Hispanic audience, "For me to simply, through executive order, ignore those congressional mandates would not conform with my appropriate role as president." This is what he told a Hispanic audience, a complete about-face by the president. It's hypocrisy at its worst.
John McCarron joins us from DePaul University. John, nice to have you with us this evening. Do you see it as classic political hypocrisy on the part of the president?
Well, I wouldn't call it hypocrisy. I call it classic Karl Rove. Let me explain myself. Karl Rove, I think, invented the idea that you really don't have to attract independents in the middle. What you really do is get your base out. Mm-hmm. And George Bush, the second, whatever, was proof positive. He got the fundamentalists out. He got the religious right out, and it worked. And I think what you may be seeing among the Democratic strategizers is getting the base out. And I think that's why you saw this move. And, again, it may be the right thing to do.
But it was a complete flip-flop from what he said 16 months ago.
Well, you know, people say a lot of things. Wasn't he different?
Wasn't he going to be different?
I mean, it's obvious that not a lot is going to happen on Capitol Hill, that Congress is in gridlock, and whatever is going to happen between now and the election, and maybe even beyond the election by whomever is going to be president, is going to happen because the executive makes it happen. And that's why we have a court system to decide whether the executive is exceeding their bounds.
John McDonough also joins us, a longtime writer, a longtime employee of the Tribune, along with John McCarron, but now a freelance writer for many, many years. Your reaction to the politics of this, John, was it brilliant or was it just cynical, as Chris suggested?
Well, I mean, to Chris's point, I know he's been very tough on deportation, much tougher than Bush was. And I've always been kind of persuaded that he was doing that really to kind of strengthen his credibility on the law as written, so that he could then use that credibility to sort of redirect that policy. I mean, Richard Nixon was, you know, tough on anti-communism, but right. He was the one who went to China. So in a sense, I think he was trying to, by revving up, you know, the enforcement of those laws year or 2 years ago. Perhaps he was trying to also build some alliances with some Republicans in Congress through whom he might have gotten some kind of legislation. She'd say that's not happened or likely to happen.
I don't know how you could build alliances with the Republicans in Congress by leapfrogging their constitutional authority.
Well, he was making those deportations.
This honestly should be a matter of legislation. If he believes as strongly as he does on this issue, the DREAM Act, the guest worker program, he would put his own political capital on the line. He would introduce legislation like he promised in 2008.
And he had 2 years when they were in control of Congress.
A full Democratic Congress, but he has not.
Is that
really
true?
I go back to cynicism during the election.
But, I mean, Bush had tried to get immigration reform done, and he was essentially defeated by his own party.
And that's a great point. Here's a president who had the courage to go up against his own party with an election year promise.
Right, and he
took
a hit. He got a lot of credit
for that. He took a hit.
Yes, he did. Right. We
want to come back. I want to follow up on this. And also, I know this is an issue that a lot of people are going to have a lot of comments on. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. I'm Bruce Dumont. Nice to have you with us tonight. From Memphis, Tennessee to Murfreesboro, Illinois, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's go to Cooksville, Tennessee, where Jerry is listening to us on WATX. Nice to have you with us tonight, Jerry.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. Good hearing from you guys.
Good.
What I see here is an absolute overreach. Like one of your panelists said there, what he said a little over a year and a half ago, roughly, that he doesn't have the authority, he doesn't have the power unilaterally to do this, but yet he does it anyway. And what I find frightening, if he'll do this before an election, if he wins the election, what will he do? And I was going through a book I haven't read in a while.
Jerry, do me a favor. I want to give you a follow-up, but I want to just respond to what you just said. Because one of the things that conservatives have been saying in this campaign thus far is, If you think that Barack Obama is bad now, wait until the second year when he wouldn't have to face re-election again. So obviously Jerry is bringing up that point. Is that something that concerns you, Chris? Is it a good political move or comment to make?
Usually, presidents look to solidify their legacy in the second term. I don't know if Obama would have anything as sweeping or far-ranging as health care reform in the second term. But he'd be looking to do something more on the international stage. Any Obama in the first term or in the second term is the same for me, or really any Republican or conservative.
How would you expect him to act in the second term, John McDonough?
Well,
a student of history and FDR and a lot of great Democratic presidents.
Well, Barack Obama is who he is, and he represents what he is. I don't look for him to really do much that's sweepingly different in the second term than the first term, because in all likelihood, we're going to continue with a deadlock government for reasons I can talk about later if you want. But he's going to be, I think, pretty much hamstrung given the, the rules of under which Congress is operating.
And why do you think that there will be deadlock government? You're saying that the Congress will stay Republican?
Well, the filibuster.
Senate will
the
flip?
Filibuster alone.
The Senate will flip.
Senate. No. Well, I don't know that the Senate will flip. Maybe yes. But whether it flips or not, the filibuster rule is still going to keep it a fairly inert branch of government.
Democrats have twice as many seats to defend as Republicans do in the Senate.
There's a good chance that
and the map skews towards Republicans, mm-hmm. and 72 seats in the House, that'll be hard to take back.
John?
Well, I'd agree with Chris, actually, that I think foreign policy, maybe some sort of a further detente with Russia and Putin involving the missile shield over Europe, maybe tied in with the Syria deal, help getting rid of the president there. That would be my guess. But, getting back to the immigrant thing, I mean, it's an executive order. And the executive order, if we have another executive next January, then he can negate that executive
and
order.
And Mitt Romney has said that he would.
Would. So fine. I mean, all it is saying it's asking federal authorities to back off on arrests. I mean, it's be like Lincoln saying no more using federal troops to return escaped slaves. What's wrong with that?
Well, and that was during a time of war, too.
That was before the war, actually.
Here's the issue.
Then we're going to go back to Jerry. Let's go back to Jerry for a second. Jerry, you had a follow-up?
What I find amazing, what's happening in this country, Whitaker Chambers in his book Witness was talking about the revolution that he saw that was coming. He was talking about all the new dealers that were communist, and the history proves him right. Where he said it wouldn't be with tanks and machine guns, it would be with bookkeeping and accounting by acts of Congress and decisions of the Supreme Court that the revolution would take place. And eventually that the country, as we know it, would disappear. And when we have people, I don't care which side it's on, what if Governor Romney becomes president and he decides to do something that's just as outrageous?
Yeah.
I'm sure we wouldn't hear that, this was the best thing.
But again, but you have that with every executive order. There were executive orders that George Bush issued that drove liberals crazy. I mean, that's what goes with that goes with the power of the presidency.
Stem cell research, for example.
This is a bit different, though.
Why is this different, Chris?
Pacifying a segment of your base on a controversial issue like abortion is different than going beyond your constitutional prerogative of enforcing the laws and actually legislating a segment of proposed legislation, which is what this executive order would do. But going back to Obama, here's a guy who lectured the Congress, the entire nation, about the great things that happened during the Eisenhower administration with a Democratic Congress and a Republican president, built the highways, funded education. You've got voices in Congress who are really serious about the Dream Act. Marco Rubio is one of them. There's a lot of other Republican votes out there.
Mm-hmm.
Why doesn't he just follow through on what he said was the golden era in politics, the 50s? Why doesn't he go out and approach the Marco Rubios of the Senate, put together peace legislation and get this through.
Well,
and
it seems to me that what he wanted to do is he wanted to upstage Marco Rubio, because Rubio has been talking about a plan like this. But again, yeah. he has not introduced it as yet.
Right.
And obviously, to me, this also may greatly elevate the likelihood of Marco Rubio being a running mate.
And Barack Obama is president of the United States. And even though it's Marco Rubio's idea, he could upstage him anyway.
John?
Well, Chris may forget that Mitch McConnell said that it was his business for the remainder of Obama's term to make sure Obama didn't get anything done. I mean, we have the 60-vote cloture rule, so we've got gridlock. So if we're going to make progress on any issues, including social issues like immigration, it's got to be done by executive order within the Constitution as determined by the Supreme Court.
Let's take another call. Let's go to Sean in Oak Park listening to us on our flagship station, 89 WLS. Go ahead. You're on the air.
How you doing? Thank you for taking my call.
Good.
I have basically a three-part question. Firstly, how does Obama, who is in the executive branch, have the right to change or interpret the laws of immigration? Secondly, doesn't this interpretation of the DREAM Act encourage kamikaze immigration of parents for the betterment of their children, no matter their ability to support their children, to immigrate to the United States? And then, thirdly, also, what happens to the parents of these DREAM Act guest children who are caught and face the reality of deportation for their crimes, and they claim they are the only means these children have of support and survival? Will these children be granted amnesty because of their children need them for money and survival, or will the children become wards of the state? Thank you.
What's your take on that, John?
Well, the executive
has this
order,
been well thought out, do you think?
Well, the executive order basically puts out of consideration young children coming in now. I mean, you have to be 16 years or older or over. That to qualify under this particular executive order. So that holds contemporary, present-day immigration still, makes it thoroughly enforceable.
Well, there was one part of this story that has not been well-received, and again, this is they're quoting a source who did not want to be identified. This was an administration source, which basically said that most of the eligible undocumented immigrants will be required to go to the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service to provide documents and pay a fee. So for those that are, there's going to have to be some passing of some money in this matter as well.
And some information, apparently, too.
And some information. So maybe this is not going to be as well received as one would think.
So you're suggesting that those who are eligible may be reluctant to take advantage of it because they may see it as a way of simply drawing out their presence in this country, and the government might turn on them in the future.
Wouldn't you?
Possibly.
No, I mean, wouldn't you? It would seem to me that would
be. Caller raises a really good point, which underscores the silliness of this executive order. You can't piecemeal your way out of immigration reform, which is what Barack Obama is doing. We need a comprehensive solution.
Agreed.
And Obama missed that opportunity cynically through interest group pandering, because he needs two-thirds of the Latino vote if he's got any prayer of reelection.
You mean the labor unions were sort of leaning on him to stay away from immigration?
Absolutely. Yeah, okay. And it was Barack Obama's amendment that killed the guest worker
program. Should he have wasted his political capital in his first term by getting behind a futile piece of legislation that a Republican president had been defeated 2 years before on?
And I don't think it's outrageous to hold someone accountable for a campaign promise.
No, but also, John, you know that in politics, the best thing that you can do for a constituency group is to espouse something that they want and actually deliver on it. The second best thing is to espouse something they want and don't deliver on it. So the rhetoric could have been good and served well, at least in a presidential election, I would think, even though Hispanic leaders, many Hispanic leaders, just like, you know, if we were having this discussion 5 months ago, many gay leaders didn't think that he was doing enough to help gay and lesbian causes.
Well, to your first point, I think that's why Obama was very tough on deportation in the first couple of years. He was trying to...
The country was demanding it also.
The country was demanding it, and he was trying to, I think, extend his credibility to those who had doubts about his... immigration credentials.
Lamar Smith, who's the chairman, Republican of Texas, the head of the House Judiciary Committee, he said in a statement that the policy change will serve as a magnet for undocumented immigrants, although only those already in the country would be eligible. But he thinks it's going to be a magnet, a signal to those around the country, or specifically south of the border, who think that at least immigration policies in the United States are changing for the better, at least to them. Back shortly. From Andover, Maine to Anderson, Indiana, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8289 on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio and on Comcast and WYCC television in Chicago. Our guests this evening include John McCarron, longtime member of the Tribune editorial family, contributing a writer for the Chicago Tribune, columnist for many years in urban affairs, and is also an adjunct professor of journalism at DePaul University and a frequent guest on this program. Chris Varonis joins us. He is a public relations executive with AESOP Communications, that is his own company. And also joining us this evening is John McDonough, for many years a writer with the Chicago Tribune as well. He is also the editor of the Encyclopedia of Advertising, produced by the Museum in association with Advertising Age and Duke University, and also a frequent contributor to National Public Radio. And you have we're going to come back to our discussion and take calls in just a moment. But again, big news in Greece today, and what does it mean to your portfolio, John?
I was remarking that when I went on email this afternoon, the first story up was Rodney King's death. And then I turned on the news and learned about the Greek election going for the more conservative candidate. And it occurred to me that Rodney King's death is not going to show up on my investment statements in the next few days, but the Greek election probably will.
And how will that affect this presidential election? What happens in Europe, Chris?
I'm sure the White House is wiping some sweat off its brow.
Yeah.
Stable Europe means a less rocky election.
John McCarron?
Well, I think we're a long way from a stable Europe, but I suspect Chris is right that the White House didn't want the socialists to win. That might have been they might have tried to drive a harder bargain against austerity, although it's kind of ironic that the president would push for austerity in Europe when he really wants to do some Keynesian stimulus here in the United States.
This is like one of those Don Winslow in the Navy episodes, you know, that used to everyone ends with a crisis, and you sort of then you see the next episode and there's relief and you breathe a sigh of relief until the next 14 minutes and there's another one.
We've got callers on the line. Let's go to Brian in Roselle, Illinois, listening to us on WLS. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen. Illegal immigration and immigration, period, is one of my pet peeve issues, and I'm in the construction industry, so I deal with this on a firsthand basis. I have for years. And what drives me crazy is political media types like you guys, we don't discuss immigration in relation to unemployment. It's linked. We don't talk about that. In America, we have a 10% unemployment rate, and that's a feel-good number. The real number is much higher. We all know that. The average American is losing standard of living because of the supply and demand relationship that's going on in the labor market. You know, we have the Federal Reserve that regulates the money supply to keep the economy healthy, but we have nothing that regulates the labor supply to keep the economy healthy. You know, Republicans love flood the market with cheap labor, legal and illegal, to keep wage levels down. But, you know, we look around the world and look at the unemployment rate in Spain and Egypt and Greece and everywhere. It's 20%, 25%, you know, and 40% of our illegal immigration problem comes through the airport, not across the Mexican border. And politicians will not face up to the fact that we just cannot accept everybody on the planet and just let them sneak into the country and say, oh, well, they're here. Let's just let them work, you know, and then we'll legalize them later. You know, it's ridiculous. And
but aren't, you know, but sir, aren't there some industries that really cry out for workers from abroad? Because there are not enough Americans, just let me finish, there are not enough Americans to do certain types of jobs in certain areas. And agriculture is one, light manufacturing is another. And because of that, there is a need for those from around the country, and primarily Mexico, to come to the United States and do some of that work.
Right, but what happens is those industries are subsidized by the taxpayer because you have an adult Hispanic male come up and pick vegetables or do whatever, and they can't make enough money to live. So what happens? He has a child with his wife, and next thing you know, like here in Illinois, they get a WIC card. You know, the government pays for the birth of the baby. The wife gets a WIC card. They're on public aid.
Yeah.
That's the problem. There's too many people living off the government, and there's too many industries living off the government because they're driven the wage levels down so low that people can't afford to live in, like, the Chicago metro area and work at these low-wage-level jobs that only illegal immigrants will take. That's the problem.
First of all, they're not all low-wage jobs. Many of them are in the construction trades, and they are not low-wage jobs. They may be lower than what the prevailing union wage is,
right,
but they're not necessarily low-paying jobs. Chris Veronis has got a comment for you.
Nowhere else in the world do you have a greater disparity of wealth than the Mexican-American border. Nowhere else. People in Mexico, the kind of people who leave to come here for opportunity are used to poverty and squalor, and you see that in the type of jobs that they take. These are tough jobs that very few Americans would take. Do we subsidize these jobs? A lot of these workers who want better future for themselves and their families pay the payroll taxes, unemployment insurance. There's a lot of money they don't see.
By the way, John, do you agree that illegal immigrants are taking jobs that Americans don't want? Would you acknowledge that?
To a large extent.
How come other Americans don't want those jobs?
Why
won't they do those jobs? They would rather be unemployed than work.
Well, for one thing, we have a sort of an ethic and a cultural bias towards sending people to college. People want to get into white collar jobs, into the professions and whatnot, get their bachelor's degrees. The minimum wage, it's very hard, especially if you're not getting health insurance and other benefits to make a living. So, yeah, I mean, benefits such as they are, remember, they've been reduced greatly. Welfare isn't like it used to be.
I don't know enough about the convergence of the bottom end of the lower middle class with the immigrant labor contingent in this country and exactly where the line is drawn and what is a proper job for one group or another. That's not something really I can speak to. But if immigrant labor is driving down the wages, I would advocate, illegal immigrants taking over some of those CEO jobs on Wall Street, drive down some of those wages.
But they're not,
maybe.
But they won't.
Or getting into unions. You know, Bruce, I probably know less about politics than economics than I do about cities, because that's basically what I wrote
about for
three decades at the Tribune. And I can tell you one thing, and I think the caller should appreciate this, that if it weren't for Hispanic immigrants, Chicago and I think maybe the 20 other largest cities in this country would be losing population instead of, as in Chicago, gaining population. And I can tick off a dozen neighborhoods in Chicago that have literally been saved from abandonment due to the fact that you have hardworking Mexican-American families moving in that aren't on welfare, that are paying taxes, and really have, to a large extent, saved Chicago and several other cities in the last 15, 20 years.
Let's go to another call. Let's go to Joanna in Schaumburg, Illinois, listening to us on 89 WLS, going on coast to coast. You're on the air.
Hi, Bruce. I'm sorry. I just wanted to call because the point about what it's costing U.S. taxpayers to support these new policies of President Obama is something I think needs to be looked into. For example, last year, it cost U.S. taxpayers $115 billion for illegal immigrants in our country. In Chicago alone, or Illinois, it cost us $3 billion last year. Health, education, and welfare. Not even going into the food stamps and the other things the other gentleman caller mentioned. As far as the jobs go, they are bringing down wages. Our American people can't get these construction jobs anymore, even roofing jobs, electrical jobs, wallboard jobs, painting jobs. They're all going to the illegals.
They're skilled labor jobs.
They hire them cheaper. They don't have to pay certain things on them. They give them cash payments. You know, it's really ruining our economy. Our people are losing their homes.
So I guess my question,
we're paying for that education.
My question would be then, who is doing this? Again, are they doing the work? Yes. Are they getting paid? Yes. Someone is hiring them. Someone is hiring them, and the person that is hiring them is someone who wants to get a job done, usually quickly, and doesn't want to pay a prevailing union wage.
And they make more profit on it, don't they?
They either make more profit on it, or it costs them less money.
But the jobs you
charge the homeowner the same.
The jobs you were reeling off were all skilled labor jobs, union jobs. I would point to the caller, and so I mean, if these jobs are being
skilled labor can be done by people who are not in unions.
It depends on the strength of the union in the construction industry. John, you might know more about that than I do, but I mean, if it's a union job, it's a union job.
Yeah, and usually only if there's government money involved, it's got to be a union job. There's something called the Davis-Bacon Act. It requires union labor, especially with federal money. But if you're having your house remodeled, that's not a union job. And
the person who's getting it done, they want the lowest price.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. But I would suggest to the caller, this is the one aspect of globalization that we see every day. But there's a lot more jobs being outsourced by Fortune 500 corporations that, in order to maximize shareholder value, our one commandment, than there are jobs being lost to people mowing your lawn.
We got to pause. 1-800-723-8229. Your reaction to the president's decision last week on the DREAM Act and basically allowing those that are in this country at the moment illegally, they're not going to be deported. Your reaction. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's go to Benton Harbor, Michigan, where Ron is listening to us on our flagship station, 89 WLS, the radio home of Dan Proft and Bruce Wolf. Go ahead.
Hello, gentlemen. This illegal immigrant issue with the labor, I don't hear nobody complain when it's Polish or Romanian or other Eastern European construction workers coming in and doing the work. And then their children slip right into the education program because they have that white skin privilege. You know, but when it's brown skin, it's real bad, you know. But those Eastern Europeans, as long as they got that light skin and blue eyes, they can come right in and steal jobs, union jobs and everything else, construction jobs. What about that, huh? And don't they benefit?
No, I think you have hit the nail on the head.
Somehow those
they pass.
Those Polish workers are living the American dream, but Mexicans aren't.
But when
and also there's less complaint about second generation Poles that may not speak the English language,
whereas everybody
gets obsessed if Mexicans don't.
One other thing, if I may, and they slip right into that racist issue too. They go right along with that. Their race going along with that, you know, anti-black, anti-brown skin. They fit real good with that racist white attitude, don't they?
Well, I'm not going to say that. I'm just saying is,
I will. You know it's true.
No, but at that particular point, I think it's about who's having their job taken. It's all about who's taking their jobs. And again, if someone is coming in, you're right. If someone is coming in from Mexico and they're doing a job and they're, you know, and maybe working for less money than someone that may have come here from Warsaw, the folks from Warsaw are going to be very upset about it.
And one further point, if I may. this country was the Mexicans before we stole it from them in the War of 1848.
That's a different subject.
But during that period when the great, you know, wave of Eastern European immigration was coming to this country in the first two decades of the 20th century, there was tremendous pushback in the early 20s. I mean, there was the rise of the Ku Klux Klan in the north, right. And there was essentially the cutoff of all immigration in 1923. So there was
we have to remember this country, the greatest transformation of the country was the building of the railroads, and the railroads in this country were primarily built by minorities, a lot of Chinese, and that's how America grew. John in Chicago, go ahead, you're on the air.
I'm actually what you're talking about, and firstly, you're talking about the early era of the United States, and the vast majority of those, the Japanese, the Polish, the Germans, the Irish
Swedes,
especially, they all emigrated, the vast majority immigrated to this country legally through Ellis Island or other ports.
Right.
And hold on, just give me a second.
I'm listening.
And what you had a situation where the African-Americans in this country, when racism was actually still very prevalent in this country, there were signs in all shops all throughout New York and Chicago that said that Irish need not apply. Okay? And that's why you have so many firefighters and police that are actually Irish and Irish heritage, and they turned it into like a family
business
identity,
right?
Is because that was one of the only jobs that they could actually get. Okay? So let me remind you that a lot of the majority of the Europeans that emigrated to this country actually came here legally. And the argument that you're making that says that these illegal Mexican immigrants, not to say anything about the legal version, but the illegal version, it's an entirely different argument. And what you're doing is you're comparing apples and oranges. It's not the same argument.
But would you look down? Are you suggesting, sir, that the majority of Mexico, let's specifically focus on Mexico and Mexicans. Are you saying that the majority of Mexicans in this country are illegal?
Absolutely not. What you're trying to do is set me up. You're trying to set up a straw man.
But you and I agree on that, sir. I do not believe that the majority of Mexicans in this country are here illegally. I don't believe that. And I also believe that a majority of the a large percentage of Mexicans in this country legally do not like the idea of those from Mexico coming here illegally.
Right. Well,
they're as upset about it as anybody else is.
As you say, I would absolutely agree that the ones that came here legally, from my experience living in Tucson, Arizona, for 3 years, not long, but 3 years was enough to get I had a fair number of friends that were Mexican. I have absolutely nothing against hardworking American citizens, okay? But when you talk to them, the older folks who tend to be the ones that actually came here legally, they actually vote Republican, and they don't like the concept of amnesty and a lot of other arguments that you're being put up against nowadays.
Then why is the Hispanic vote considered Democratic?
Resistance. It's the path of least resistance. If you can get a free meal, are you going to take a free meal or not? Okay, if you can get better wages or a better lifestyle, you guys mentioned that earlier in the program, and you said that they're living in many folks in Mexico are living in squalor and having living with third world conditions.
But John, the point you were asking is the majority of Mexicans and Hispanics, the majority are Democratic.
They are a political constituency, an important one, right?
But not all. And Hispanics, when you look at there are Republicans who did very well by getting about a third of the vote, Hispanic vote. Ronald Reagan got a third of the vote. George Bush in Texas got a third of the vote. I mean, Hispanics do vote Republican because in many cultural areas and, you know, at family matters, they are more Republican than they are Democratic.
But
it's not the majority, however, and that's why the Hispanic vote, and maybe in the next hour, we'll talk about where this decision by Barack Obama, in my view, he decided to do this because it helps him. He raises the possibility of winning five additional states, and that could be the difference between being reelected are not being reelected. And we'll talk about those in the next hour. We got callers on the line, 1-800-723-8289. Again, your reaction to the president's decision last week on the DREAM Act, and taking more calls at 1-800-723-8289. If you're listening to this show on radio, keep the calls coming. If you're watching us on television, we'll see you next week. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont. We continue with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Joining us this evening, conservative Chris Voronis, liberal John McDonough, and John McCarron, journalism professor at DePaul University and a contributor to the Chicago Tribune. Our program tonight coming to you from my home base at the brand new Museum of Broadcast Communications, now open Tuesday through Saturday from 10 in the morning till 5 at night, and toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Our email address is btb@museum.tv. And if you'd like to join us on the World Wide Web, www.beyondthebeltway.com. In hour number one, we have touched a nerve. People are responding to President Barack Obama's decision last week as it relates to a DREAM Act age illegal immigrants in this country, basically saying that the Justice Department is no longer going to seek them out and deport them, and it is likely to be a significant political move in that there are several states where the large Hispanic population could indeed, obviously the president has to have an energized base, as was mentioned in the first hour. And again, if Hispanic voters in those states can react in a very positive way to this, maybe not in a uniform way, it could help him in several states, including New Jersey and Nevada and Colorado, to name three, as well as Arizona. And maybe a couple of other states as well, but those four definitely. And I guess a question that I asked very briefly in the first hour, but we'll go around the table before we take calls. Do you think, Chris Voronis, that because of this issue, that Marco Rubio of Florida is taking three steps forward, becoming the running mate for Mitt Romney?
In a way, Obama has pulled the rug from underneath Rubio, trying to get political points for his own version of the DREAM Act, which he's been trying to push through the Senate. This is a tough issue for Romney. I think he knows it, and I think you heard it with his comments today, which were very measured and decidedly uncontroversial. So I think if you're Mitt Romney, you keep the focus on the economy and jobs.
They might be controversial to the base of his own party, though, in some cases. I mean, his measured response to this.
John, what do you think? Does it help Rubio, or does it solidify somebody like a Rob Portman? Because it moves Romney away from the discussion of illegal immigration, because if he selects Rubio, at least the vast majority of the analysis is probably going to say that he did it to try to deal with his Hispanic problem.
Yeah, it's scary, but I think, again, I agree with Chris, the conservative, that it's more likely that that Romney will try to emphasize the difference between he and the incumbent by going with someone who's a little more hardline on immigration. I might add, too, I mean, having watched Mexican Americans vote in Chicago now for 20 years. It's almost kind of scary what Obama is doing if you're a Democrat and want to see him reelected, because frankly, Hispanics do not have a great record for registering and voting. I mean, we've got wards on the west side of Chicago. You have one ward side by side, predominantly Mexican American. They'll turn out one voter for every three voters that vote in the Anglo-white ward, mm-hmm. Down Archer Avenue, who come out for the Mike Madigans and Bill Lipinski's of the Chicago political scene. So step one might be this, what the president has done here. Step two has better be to get out and register people and light a fire to actually make it pay off.
You know what else is scary? That this decision, this executive order decision, mm-hmm. has nothing to do with illegal immigration or guest worker. Nothing at all. This
voter turnout.
This decision is about small ball by Democratic constituencies. First, you had the so-called war on women. Then you had gay marriage. Then you had pandering the students with cut-rate student loans. And now it's the mm-hmm. Hispanics' turn. So what Barack Obama is not saying is, never mind the economy. And by the way, it's
so
all
he's working,
it's all
he's
George
working
Bush.
The margins. He's working the margins.
Working the margins. He's playing small ball. It's all George Bush. It's all Greece. Never mind the economy. You know, Democratic base, I've got goodies for you. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Mitt Romney is dangerous and the devil all at once.
John, to your point, you said the voter turnout in Mexican-American districts is very low. Why would Mexican-Americans who have gone to the trouble of becoming citizens not exercise their right to vote?
That's a great question. I think one might be a political cultural thing coming from a nation where it's been one party rule for the mm-hmm. most of their lives, the PRI,
and corrupt.
They're citizens now, though, in
and
America.
There is a sense of you know, those are elites that do that political thing. I'm just trying to survive.
But it's also, well, I think we should say that in when you talk about you know, Mexican turnout in Chicago, that is far lower than if you were to look at statistics in New Mexico, in Arizona, in Texas, where there is a longer tradition of not only Hispanic populations voting, but Hispanic participation in the political situation there. By the way, New Mexico is one of those, is that fifth state where I think this could have a significant effect. So there is a tradition, obviously it's the part of the country that has the largest, you know, percentage of Hispanic
voters. Used to be Mexico.
Used to be Mexico, right. That's why they call it New Mexico. Mm-hmm. Used to be Old Mexico. That whole area. Speaking of that, let's go back to what was once Mexico. Let's go to Texas. Eric, listening to us on KLBJ. In the capital of the great state, Lone Star State. Go ahead, Eric.
Good evening. I just wanted to say, well, two quick points. No, I'm not real happy with what Obama has passed through because, you know, A, I do think it is political. It's grossly political, really. And it does, you know, illegal immigration does affect the price of labor in America. Labor is a commodity dictated by supply and demand. But my core point is this. I don't think the Republicans have any real room to get mad about this, considering that Reagan gave blanket,
amnesty?
Amnesty to, what was it, 1 point something million or more illegal immigrants. And right. Furthermore, Bush, the recent Bush, you know, his mantra was, well, they'll do jobs Americans won't do. But it, so, you know, I don't understand. I'm kind of really dissatisfied with both groups.
Well, I would just suggest, perhaps as a little sidebar, maybe we should sort of all agree to put aside the criticism that it is political. I mean, this is a political year, and everything is political. So let's not criticize a politician's behavior because it is political.
But
I mean,
this
that's
is
his business.
This is you're right. That is correct. But this is egregious because it is the complete opposite of what he said 16 months ago.
Well, we talked about that.
Oh, well, I know
that,
but
for
you
doing
can't.
That then.
But you can't. He was addressing a Hispanic group, and he was basically saying, "I can't do this because basically I don't have the power to do this. I don't have the authority to do this. You want me to do this, but I can't do it." Now, fade to black. It's 16 months later. Whoop! I'm going to do it now. Mm-hmm. I mean, come on, that's pretty bold. Especially, again, this was the new face. This was the unpolitician coming from the great plains of Illinois. Back shortly with calls. From From Valdosta, Georgia to Vancouver, Washington, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight. Speaking of Vancouver, let's head there. Joe is listening to us on KXLY. Go ahead, Joe. You're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking the call. I just wanted to bring up an issue, a perspective that I have. I was in construction for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
About 10 years ago, started getting a lot of influx of Eastern Europeans and more Mexicans. And I want to say I don't have anything against anybody for bettering themselves. But the issue is contractors are hiring these people. They pay them less. I think they're selling out, make more money for themselves. They're not doing as quality of work. Makes it harder for young kids to get in the trades. I got out of the trades myself 6 years ago, went to work for the railroad. Now I just had a home built for myself 4 months ago. And it's all Hispanic, and they're all Eastern Europeans that are working on these jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And
Joe, I want to just follow up on one thing that you said, and that is you said, and then I think I sort of read into it, that you say the quality of their work is not as good as other workers?
Yes.
But that's just on an individual basis. It's not.
Well, no, it's
not
an issue. I've seen it. I was in the business for 25 years.
Okay.
So, I mean, I have a pretty good experience with that. And the reality is it's the contractors that are hiring these people are the ones that are selling out because they're trying to make more money for themselves, increase their profit.
There is no question about that. And one of the reasons why they're doing it is they're trying to get jobs from people who have money, who want to get things built. And those people are looking for the lowest possible price. So
but
I mean,
that price is not getting lower. The houses aren't cheaper. The houses aren't getting any cheaper. The end product, the end price of the home isn't getting any cheaper.
Okay, so
I'm talking
all
about small businesses.
Okay, it's profiteering on the part of the contractor.
Look, the bottom line is illegal immigration is illegal. And employers don't get a pass if they hire illegal immigrants. One of the biggest problems with the Reagan immigration reform is that there was an absence of employer sanctions. Employers, in my opinion, should be held accountable, and we should stop illegal immigration. There should be comprehensive reform. The president's turned his back on both of those things.
Back shortly with our callers. Let's go to Eduardo in Chicago. You're on the air.
You know, Latino unemployment is 11%, so Latinos that are going to vote in November, they're going to be voting their pocket votes. They're not going to be voting immigration issues like any other ethnicity.
Do you agree with that, John?
I think that will be the case. I think Obama should be paying more attention to economic issues. I think he's got a case to make. I mean, he can point, obviously Chris won't agree with him, but he can point to a jobs program that's been stalled for a year and a half in Congress, public works, the stimulus and whatnot. I think that case can be made.
I agree also, Eduardo. I think it is a disservice that the media and some analysts fall into, and that is believing that Hispanics only vote on this issue,
yeah,
or gays only vote on gay and lesbian issues, or women only vote on reproductive rights issues. These are important issues to sectors of the American voting, but I think it's insulting to suggest that a Hispanic has strong opinions on the economy,
yeah,
on the war on terrorism, on the quality of their schools, on the environment, on a whole host of issues. And I think it's this tend to knee jerk reaction on the part of many news analysts to suggest that everybody is monolithic and they think that
way. Well, you are absolutely right, Bruce, but I wouldn't stop at the mainstream media. This goes in the White House as well. Whose policies deliberately are aimed at producing that very end that you are condemning. The White House and Latino and other political leaders are going to play to their constituencies and patronize them, essentially, and tell them, This election for you is about illegal immigration. It's the White House, too.
Well, it is, and part of that is the other part of the political aspect of it, is this White House and other White Houses, they want to paint the opposition as the boogeyman, as the person that's going to either take something away from you. Oh, you know, if you vote for Romney, he's going to stack the courts and they're going to overturn Roe v. Wade. Roe v. Wade is not going to be overturned. I hope there isn't anybody listening tonight that believes that if you vote for Mitt Romney, that Roe v. Wade is going to be overturned. It's not going to be overturned. It's not.
Well, I think, or regardless of how conciliatory Romney sounded on the Obama proposal this morning on the news shows, the Hispanic voter is still going to kind of sniff that base that's underneath the Romney campaign, and they're not going to like what they, you know, smell too much.
Why? Why would you?
Because the Republicans have defined their party to a large extent as being anti-immigration.
No, you have defined the Republican Party as being anti-immigration.
I think the party defined itself way.
No, it did not define. I mean, the point is, the point is, if you look at the leadership on that, we talked about Reagan. Again, he didn't do it well.
And Bush supported it, and McCain supported it. Right, yeah.
That's right. Well, name the art. Now, those were, in my view,
but 55 senators threatened to filibuster the Bush rule.
Then those are 55 senators. But the leadership of the party, the presidency, the presidents that we're talking about, they have done more on the issue of illegal immigration, on dealing with this issue and trying to solve the immigration issue. Mm-hmm. At the detriment to some of the members of their own party, they have done a lot more than some Democrats. It's easy for Democrats to speak out on the vast majority of issues because they, you know what? They got nothing to lose.
Those conciliatory Republicans.
Show me a Democrat who is a profile in courage and speaks against the party ideology. Show me one. Name a name.
No, I can't. There were some blue dog Democrats who joined the Republicans to defeat that.
And you know, John, historically, when we're talking about civil rights in this country, you know, going back into the 50s and primarily the 60s, it was moderate when there was a moderate wing of the Republican Party. It was moderate Republicans that led to the Civil Rights Act of 1964.
Well, you know, that goes to an interesting issue.
And African-Americans today should be reminded of that. It was moderate Republicans, and those standing in the schoolhouse door, literally and figuratively, were primarily Southern Democrats, and they were the ones that were keeping the black voters down.
Let me take a minute and make a point, because what you say is very interesting about the political parties.
And correct,
and I'm not challenging. When you and Bruce, when the three of us, Chris, you're a little younger, but I mean when the three of us were growing up, the Republican and Democratic parties each had covered a fairly broad ideological spectrum. Each party had a bit of the DNA of the other party kind of inside itself.
That's right.
So that was, I think, one of the reasons that made it possible for the Republicans and Democrats to do business, why Eisenhower could do business with Lyndon Johnson and so on and so forth.
That's right.
I think what we have evolved to now is a party system that has sort of grown out of register with the constitutional system that it's supposed to serve. We have a government that is elected in three different parts, each independent of the other, the president and the Congress and the Senate. Each, you know, anybody can vote any way they want. The parties, it seemed to me, have become more based on a parliamentary model, where it's they're ideologically defined. In England, you don't vote for a prime minister. You vote for your local MP, and whoever gets if the Labour Party gets the most MPs, then the head of the Labour Party becomes the prime minister. So each chief executive in a parliamentary system has a working majority.
But when you say that the Republican Party has been defined in one way, that is media's interpretation of the Republican Party, because there are leaders in the Republican Party today, and I think it includes Mitt Romney, and I think it includes John McCain and Lindsey Graham and many others, including Orrin Hatch. There are closet moderates. Mm-hmm. There are closet moderates in the Republican Party who, you know what, they liked the idea of what President Bush did as a member of the White House and what he did in Texas. Mm-hmm. because he did more to solidify Republican support amongst Hispanics than anyone in the last 20 years. And he still didn't get his way. He was the president of the United States. He still didn't get his way on this issue. Mm-hmm. And a lot of right-wing conservatives, that's one of the reasons why they don't like George Bush.
So if Romney is elected, who are we going to get? The governor of Massachusetts, or are we going to get the present candidate?
We are going to get, in my view, we're going to get a person who because of his upbringing, because of his intellect, because of his education, because of his basic moderation, not extremism, is probably going knows that he's not going to go overboard in coming up with any sort of extreme policies on anything.
Mm-hmm.
That's who the guy is. This guy is not some far fire-breathing right-winger. Mm-hmm. You have to speak that way to win a primary, just as Barack Obama, you know, he was the guy. Remember how he was the fire-breathing he had in his primary against Hillary Clinton? He had to stake out the left, you know, the guy that was going to close Guantanamo mm-hmm. on the first day. Didn't happen. Yeah. He was going to repeal the
Patriot Act.
Didn't do it.
That was another filibuster that he ran into. So the opposition was going to do it. Well, I mean,
Where was the executive order? He was going to do it. He did it on day one. Guantanamo is open today. So what I'm just saying is that politicians in both parties, they play to their extremes. When it comes right down to it, don't expect too much change.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, back shortly. 1-800-723-8029. We've got calls wall to wall from all over the country. You'll hear them when we continue live from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. From Birmingham, Alabama to Biloxi, Mississippi, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. John McCarron is here. He is a journalism professor, adjunct journalism professor at DePaul University. And for 30 plus years, he has been a contributor to the Chicago Tribune. His main area of expertise has been urban affairs. John McDonough also joins us. He, for many years, also worked for the Chicago Tribune, was an advertising copywriter, and is the editor of the Encyclopedia of Advertising, produced by the Museum and Advertising Age in Duke University several years ago, and also a contributor to National Public Radio. You hear him great reports, usually does a lot of stuff about broadcasting in World War II, and is a great raconteur and a historian of broadcasting and advertising. Conservative commentator this evening is Chris Voronitz. He is a public relations executive. He is the founder and president of ASOP Communications, and that's our group for this evening, and we've got lots of callers on the line. Let's head to Springville, Alabama, where Joshua is listening to us on Sirius XM Radio tonight. Joshua, where is Springville, Alabama? Are you there? Well, Joshua's gone. Well, let's go to JJ in Birmingham, Alabama, listening to us on WAPI. Go ahead, JJ.
Wow, what an honor for me, Mr. Dumont. I know where Springville is. It's not far from me, just north of Birmingham.
Okay.
Okay, I'm out of Morris, Alabama. I just want to say, and I guess this is old now, I'm a semi-retired, 75-year-old nuclear environmental editor tech writer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had lots of experience working for some of the big names, direct hire, job shopping, contract work, Department of Energy and whatnot. And it was funny to me. They'd start laying off their qualified engineers who'd been with them for a long time and then extend my contract as a tech writer, putting me to work doing their rewrites and updates for resumes and interview coaching and so on. And then the companies would be crying to the government and the job shops that there were no qualified Americans available while they were processing in people from India, Pakistan, the Philippines, and, let's see, Formosa, not Formosa, Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a cry, you know? As far as people who say young people aren't interested in working for somebody, gosh, how can they get a job if there's an ocean of people who work for nearly nothing out there, who aren't citizens? That's all I had to say.
All right, stay on
Love
the line.
Program.
Let's let Chris and everybody respond. Stay on the line, then we'll say farewell.
I feel like this is sort of old hat. You know, there are certain jobs in this country that I think Americans that have been born here and raised here have come up through this culture. I legitimately think Americans who are from here are culturally predisposed not to do certain jobs, as opposed to a Mexican migrant who has known indigent poverty his or her entire life. And these are the jobs we're talking about here. These are really tough, backbreaking jobs, but they just happen to have a wage attached to them, whereas in Mexico there wasn't.
So you're saying, let me interpret what you just said.
Me?
That no, I'm going to ask. I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that, JJ, because I think JJ is talking about a different level of employee, I believe. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're talking about a low-end employee, JJ. If you're talking about that they're looking at resumes coming in from India, those jobs that are coming in from India, the workers that are coming in from India generally are at a higher pay level than, let's say, a Mexican migrant. Am I correct in your in interpreting your comments?
I think you've got it right. Yeah, okay. I think you've got it right.
So it depends on where you are. But I guess my question would be is, are you basically saying that let's talk about jobs where Mexicans frequently are frequently you'll find them. Okay.
Gardening.
I'm asking Chris. Gardening is one. Busboys.
Agriculture.
Valet parkers. Now, are you saying that there are not young white or young African Americans, entry level, that don't know how to park a car, don't know how to mow a lawn, don't know how to wash a dish, don't know how to clean and walk around with an empty tray in a restaurant?
For sure there are, and it would be silly for anyone to assume that there is not some job loss. And I can't prove it by the numbers, but I have to think it's on the margins. On the whole, these jobs carry a certain social status that I think Americans who've come up in this culture want to avoid.
Social stigma is what you're saying.
Yes.
So you're saying blacks don't want to do those types of jobs because they're too demeaning to them, and so they would rather have no job or be on welfare than to be a busboy?
It would be,
or to clean a table or to park a car. Yeah. I'm trying to find out the jobs, because when I hear the jobs, people won't do. I don't think there is a job that a Mexican won't do.
Well, if that's true, if what Chris says is true, then things have changed from 25 or 30 years ago when, high school and college students were willing to take those kinds of jobs to pick up extra money.
Well, and they do.
Still
or make or a job at a fast food restaurant.
I mean, you just go into it knowing it's not a career; it's a job.
Right.
Yeah. You will. This is a generic here. I mean, I would say that you will find more Hispanic young people. This is. I want to make sure I'm not getting myself in trouble here. It seems to me that this is an anecdotal observation that in many entry level jobs in recent years, there has been an increase in the number of Hispanic workers in areas and jobs that once upon a time were held by African Americans.
That's kind of my impression.
Okay. Does everybody agree with that anecdotal?
Generally speaking, yeah, I think that holds water.
All right. I guess my question, does anybody have an answer for that? Are the Mexicans working for less money than a restaurateur would pay a black to be a busboy?
Well, I think an awful lot of the high school and particularly college students are probably off trying to dig up internships for themselves rather than, because they're looking towards a career.
JJ, listen, thanks very much for your call. We do appreciate it. Let's go to Tom listening to us in Chicago on AM 1000. AM 1000. 89 WLS. If you're listening to us on AM 1000, you got the wrong place. We'll start talking sports in just a moment. Go ahead.
Well, good evening. Whatever channel and megahertz it is.
Yeah, whatever it is.
I happen to be in Chicago. I'm from Arkansas.
Okay.
And I've had two instances. Number one, I'm retired, but I am a social worker. And two, I've got a very specialized home. It's a geodesic dome. A very unique house. I've had American contractors work in the house, and I've had Mexicans work on the house. I got to tell you, I just had my house roofed. The quality was, if not as good, better than any American contractor. That's not the issue. The issue is that there are certain job categories, especially in the South, that Americans will not absolutely do. Migrant farm workers, ask any farmer, I don't care where he is, what his predicament is right now with regards to migrant farm workers. They're all going to tell you they're in trouble. As far as the restaurants and those type of salaries, ask the same thing. Yes, the restaurants will pay the same thing they pay a Mexican as they pay anybody else. The problem is that a typical American will not strive to do that work for a long period of time. They do it for a short period, but not long term. And so the problem is that in certain job categories, yeah, we're hurt. As far as the advanced job categories, I'm a retired engineer. I got to tell you, we in America have got to get back to school and start to excel above the Asians and the Indians. Otherwise, what you're going to find out in the sciences are there will be no America.
Yeah, I think, John, I think the caller makes a point, as did JJ before him, that when you're talking about highly technical jobs, JJ was in nuclear, you say you're an engineer. I go to a hospital, you look in a radiology department, you see a lot of South Asian folks. Yep. They're well-educated.
Filipinos.
Well-educated, they're well-qualified, and you're seeing because of the wonders of the microchip and communications and whatnot that a lot of upscale jobs that formerly had been exclusively for well-educated Americans can now be done on the other side of the world, reading x-rays or writing boilerplate legal documents and whatnot. Doesn't have to be done here anymore. So this problem is creeping up, and to some extent it doesn't have to do with immigration anymore. It does have to do with skills development and the way we've sort of let education go fallow in this country in many respects.
Even the and I think he was defining it as a problem, JJ in Alabama,
mm-hmm.
Well-educated professionals, technical professionals. I'm not talking about migrant workers coming in and taking jobs that American citizens had. Honestly, and as a matter of immigration policy, that's a good thing. We want to import intellectual capacity into this country. We want that. If people are going to be educated here,
but it's
from
not.
Outside
but,
the country,
but it's not. It's not a good idea if, as JJ was describing, is if you have an experienced core, and suddenly the ownership of the company wants to get rid of the higher priced people that he has, and so they're sending out resumes encouraging other people from either China or India to come over here to do the same job for less money. That's not a good idea. You think that's a good idea? Anyway, think about it. When we come back, we will talk more. 1-800-723-8289. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to Eureka, California. David is listening to us on KGOE. Go ahead, David.
Howdy. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling me.
Mr. Romney ran on a platform of returning people home using E-Verify. He better stick with that or he will not get my vote. What's going on here is a family squabble. These people brought their sons and daughters into this country knowingly, illegally. It is up to these parents to tell these children, hey, we did something wrong, we made a mistake, the only way to fix it, make it right, is for me to apologize and us to get the hell out of here. And that's what should happen. The families fix their own little squabbles and leave. That's it, period.
So you're talking
about these kids nothing.
You're talking about
nothing.
You're talking about taking a youngster who's grown up in America, speaks nothing but English, sending him back to a country he's never had any experience or contact with.
With the parents. Right. The
with
parents
the parents.
Should go
with the
along.
He wants the parents
problem,
to go back.
Mine,
well, your compassion is appreciated.
Mm-hmm. All right, listen, Dave, thanks very much for your call. We appreciate it. Let's go to Matthew, listening to us in Noel, Missouri, on XM Satellite Radio. Where is Noel, Missouri? Or Noel, Missouri?
It's Noel, Missouri. It's in the southwest corner of the state.
Southwest corner, okay. So, okay. By Cape Girardeau?
Say again?
Is it near Cape Girardeau?
No, it's near Joplin.
Okay, Joplin, okay. Go ahead.
So, you know, as far as immigrant workers, if you look at the conditions, the world conditions in Mexico, for the youngsters and even for the adults, these people can't even provide for their families down there. I mean, the income, the average income is, what, $1 a day?
Yeah.
So, and, you know, they're not just taking gardener jobs and farmer jobs and busboy jobs. But
no.
There is a lot of good-paying jobs. I happen to work at one of them where there is a lot of Mexican workers there. And you know what? They're good workers.
Yep.
But what's the alternative? They have nothing to do but either steal or sell drugs. So we kick them all out of the country and go on a roundup and ship them all back to Mexico to where, you know, they starve and live in poverty. I mean, I thought we were a melting pot, a country of compassion. You know, we claim to be a Christian nation, but I don't believe that's, you know, very Christian.
Plus,
but as far as higher level jobs that we were talking about, I myself wanted to go to school to be an electrical engineer. I got the grants and the loans to do it, but in order to get a job, it's almost impossible because American companies in the engineering field have contracted out all that labor over to Saudi Arabia and India and Asia.
Right.
So we have a problem, but it's not on the level of, you know, immigrants taking our jobs. It's on the level of us not being able to get a job because American companies have sent them overseas.
Well, that's so true. You know, we operate, we're competing with nations that have industrial policies, that have educational policies, that plan. Here, that's verboten. It's you're called a socialist if you suggest there ought to be a national industrial policy. Here we have only one commandment, and that's maximize shareholder value, the thinking being that if everyone just pursues their own selfish interest, including those people that are corporations, will all benefit in the end. Well, it's not working too well in the global economy, and to me that's what the presidential campaign ought to be fought over, not this special interest identity politics, but we ought to get right to the harder matter, and I think that's it.
Well, the caller suggested that, if I understood him correctly, that you know, one of the consequences of sort of rejecting all this, pushing back on immigration is that they go back and they become drug dealers. Well, the answer to that is a simple one that's been discussed a lot lately, and that's legalizing drugs, particularly marijuana, which is certainly the majority of the imported contraband coming from south of the Rio Grande. And maybe this is a subject that be postponed to another program.
Nope.
But
no, that's another whole program. But
it's
again,
the capitalist solution to the drug problem.
But the point that what the caller, and by the way, it was again one of the great things that I enjoy about doing this program is again. We can have one caller from Missouri and another caller from halfway around the country, completely opposite views. I mean, this gentleman is offering a compassionate view.
Yes.
Of what happens? The other person is dealing with his definition of what compassion is, because and that is not to speak in any with any disdain towards him. But the reality is, you know, there are taxpayers. And taxpayers do have to pay more money. They, you know, their services in their states are affected by an influx of people who are coming to the country illegally. So, you know, it's hitting that guy in his pocketbook. So he's seeing the problem from a different perspective. It isn't necessarily a wrong perspective.
Yeah, but
his passion is he is seeing what he thinks is a crumbling of society.
We had a caller earlier who was throwing out a billion this and a billion that and what it was costing us in the country and in specifically in Illinois. But I wonder, one, two, were those figures accurate? And second, are they net? Are they net figures? What about the taxes that are being paid by immigrants? You know, a lot of most Western democracies are getting in economic trouble because they can't reproduce their population. Look at Japan. Wouldn't they like to have an immigrant problem? You know, I mean, it's a major issue. And to me, immigration is a healthy thing. It ought to be legal immigration, however.
And it's not going to go away. The issue will not go away. The solutions certainly are not likely to go away rather quickly. John McKern has been with us, associate professor, adjunct professor of journalism at DePaul University. And John McDonough, veteran writer, and our conservative commentator this evening, public relations executive Chris Varonis. Thank you all, gentlemen, for being with us on this program. Jenny B. Production, produced in association with WLS Radio in Chicago. Tom Veracruz and Dan Dorfman help make the program possible. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago.